Thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. There is a reason they call him the Fabulist. He's because he's our wonderful producer. Rob Center did a fantastic job all week long, and he ain't done yet. He's going to archive this interview, and he's going to make sure that On the Mark runs 100% smoothly today. In the studio, Movie Mike McCranahan is here, professional movie critic. His website, aisleseat.com, staff writer for Ranker, member of the Critics' Choice Association and the Online Film Critics Society. He's a winner of the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters Award and author of two books. And guess what? He gets to talk to us every Friday morning. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Movie Mike, you have a look at Gretel and Hansel.
Gretel and Hansel puts a feminist twist on the classic fairy tale. Sophia Lillis from the It movies stars as Gretel. She and her little brother are kicked out of their home and forced to make it on their own. They end up finding shelter at the house of a witch, played by Alice Krieg. While there, Gretel learns how to use her special powers, which include telekinesis, but then comes to suspect that the witch is stealing the souls of children, and that means that she and Hansel might be next. It's important to know that this is not really a plot-driven movie. It focuses on mood, tone, and atmosphere. In other words, if you like the kind of horror that's all jump scares and creatures, prepare to be bored half to death. On the other hand, if you dig a good, eerie, slow-burn chiller, Gretel and Hansel will keep you hooked. The cinematography creates an appropriately claustrophobic feel, and the production design makes the witch's house seem very ominous. Lillis and Krieg both deliver strong performances, with the latter demonstrating that underplaying the villain is often way more effective than chewing the scenery. I also like the story's theme of a teenage girl finding her strength against a predatory adult trying to exploit her and her brother. Gretel and Hansel won't be for every horror fan, but it was definitely for me. On a scale of 1 to 4, I give it 3, Brothers Grimm.
Wow, okay. Now, do I vaguely recall that we hadn't heard much about this and we weren't super excited that this would be a real great film?
Yeah, it was kind of under the radar. The studio dropped it on Super Bowl weekend, which is one of the lowest grossing weekends at the box office of the year. So I think they knew they had something kind of different, something that wasn't going to be ultra commercial, and they didn't do a lot of advertising for it. There was some, but not the hype of, you know, certainly Birds of Prey, which opens today. So yeah, this one flew a little bit under the radar. I think they knew it was not necessarily going to be for people who love The Conjuring, for example.
Okay, and what else? What are some similar movies? I mean,
to this, it really reminded me of a movie from about 4 or 5 years ago called The Witch. They came out, and that movie did okay at the time. I mean, it was an independent film. It made, I don't know, 20-some million dollars, so it was fairly notable. But the same kind of thing. The emphasis in both movies is just really on tone and atmosphere and trying to create a vibe that's creepy. You don't get the jump scares that you get in Insidious or The Conjuring. It's just really more about atmosphere and ambiance and just trying to generally unsettle you that way.
And were they successful in the female viewpoint, kind of raising that up a little bit?
I think so. It's really interesting because Gretel is the main character, and she's a teenage girl who's, like a lot of teenage girls, just sort of coming into her own, and then she comes face to face with this very seasoned witch who knows a lot more than she does and is very strong and powerful and confident. So over the course of the story, this teenage girl has to figure out how to tap into her own abilities and strengths and her own intelligence to defeat this much older woman. So to me, that's a really interesting dynamic. Again, people who just want to go and have something pop out at them every 5 minutes will probably say, nah, that's not for me. But if you can get on the more low-key vibe like that, this is really a well-done movie.
Who directed this? I haven't heard much about it.
I'm glad you asked me that. The director is a guy named Osgood Perkins, and his horror credentials are legit. He's the son of Anthony Perkins, who played Norman Bates in Psycho.
Okay. So that's on his resume. Mm-hmm. Would I know anything else he's done?
He's an independent horror director. He made a film about 4 years ago called The Black Coat's Daughter that, again, wasn't a real mainstream movie, didn't get a wide release, but has a definite cult audience. So he's a director, I would say, who's on his way up. It's only, I think, his third film. So he's somebody that we really should keep an eye on.
Okay. And I always ask you, just because it's a bad habit, mm-hmm. What would have made it a 4? You know, where did this maybe lack, maybe in the acting or plot or something like that?
For me, I just would have liked to have seen even more. I think it could have used a little bit more of a plot. I'm okay with these slow burn kind of horror movies. I like them. I find them interesting. it's maybe a little too slow at times in that sense. You know, it could have used a few moments where something more overt happened.
You want a jump scare too, don't you?
They could have tossed in one or two.
Just something. Yeah. A tree falls over or something. Yeah. That's all it was.
I liked it. I mean, I went in, I wasn't really sure what to expect, and I found myself getting wrapped up in it. So kind of a nice little surprise here.
All right. Well, super. Well, we appreciate their opinion.
Brothers Grimm.
Brothers Grimm for Gretel and Hansel. Not Hansel and Gretel, but Gretel and Hansel. And this is the girl's eye view of what happened in the forest that particular day. Boy, we lost Kirk Douglas, and
yeah.
I'm ashamed to admit I just never really realized what a big, big star he was.
Yeah, Kirk Douglas passed away at the age of 103, and what an extraordinary life and career he had. Nominated for, I believe, 3 Academy Awards, made so many classic films. Of course, his very famous son, Michael Douglas. And Kirk Douglas was, he was true Hollywood royalty. You don't get much more Hollywood royalty than him. He was just an incredible actor and somebody who was very popular within the industry and just beloved by the public. So kind of a devastating loss, but hard to feel too bad. I mean, he lived to be 103. He had a very full life and a very full career. So he definitely was not shortchanged.
Did he escape the Me Too movement of past Hollywood sort of male stars?
Pretty much. I mean, that was an interesting sort of thing that went around this week. There was a story that circulated online. People were saying that he had been accused at one point of very violently sexually assaulting Natalie Wood when she was 16. But that story doesn't have any basis to it. That story originated from a gossip blog a number of years ago in the comments section and has kind of become an urban legend since then. But there is no credible claim ever that Kirk Douglas was inappropriate that way, at least not that I've ever heard.
Well, and I saw the same thing, and one of the rebuttals was that in her tragically shortened life, as it was, she never spoke of it, talked about it. There's no published report, no police record, no nothing.
Right. She claimed, or one of her family claimed, at one point as a teenager, she had been sexually assaulted by a studio executive. So there may have been that in her past, but she never made any accusations against Kirk Douglas. So I'm glad we can sort of clear that up for anybody else who's heard that. That is a totally unsubstantiated rumor that started on a gossip blog.
Well, it kind of goes against what he did. People did talk about the fact that he would have affairs, and his wife of, 60 years or something grew to the point where I guess she accepted that, and, you know, and that's their personal business. But
right.
None of this forced stuff as we watch the Weinstein trial. I guess it's in the process of winding down at this point. Well, we have the Oscars on Sunday. Have a preview.
Well, I'll tell you what my predictions are. I mean, I predict it's going to be very long, and I predict it's going to be very predictable.
But no host, right?
They're going hostless this year, yeah, which I think is probably a smart
choice.
So just
presenters and awards, presenters and awards, but a wide range of presenters, so you get to see some of your stars in action.
Mm-hmm.
Do you predict the Oscars? Do you sort of have a favorite best picture, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, the odds on favorites at this point are 1917 for best picture, which I'm fine with. That was number 2 on my 10 best list last year. I think in the supporting categories, it'll be Laura Dern for Marriage Story and Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And in the main acting categories, it's going to be Joaquin Phoenix for Joker and probably Renee Zellweger for Judy.
Okay.
So those would be my predictions for who will win.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that. What relevance are the Oscars? You know, without a host, I kind of give it a who cares thing. You know, I like to watch the red carpet satisfactorily, but then awards kind of get drawn out. How relevant are the Oscars?
I think they are relevant because they help movies, and they especially help smaller movies, and that's what I like about them. For example, this year you have a movie like Parasite, which is a film from South Korea. It's subtitled, and yet the fact that it was nominated for Best Picture has gotten people who maybe might not want to go see a subtitled South Korean film to go see a subtitled South Korean film. It helps little movies, independent films, you know, that could use the hype kind of has a negative connotation, but you know what I mean, the publicity, the attention, the spotlight. So I think that the Oscars are really relevant in that sense. It directs people towards good movies that they should pay attention to.
Yeah, I'm ashamed to admit that. I'm in the subtitle group, too, that doesn't really love them. But you know, the funny thing is, if I'm watching a TV show with heavy accents and I don't hear, I won't hesitate to put the closed captions on.
Yeah.
But I won't watch a whole movie.
Yeah, a lot of people have that block. And really, see a couple subtitle films, it becomes very easy after that point. I struggled with that when I was younger. And after a few movies, I find now I can just look at them and see what they are real quick and focus on the movie. It really doesn't impact me anymore. So it takes a little practice, I guess.
Okay. And so in terms of the relevance, they help the movie industry and they would help moviegoers. I mean, if I weren't going to see Parasite, maybe I would because of that.
Right.
There's always, what was that hashtag that came out? No white Oscar.
Oscar so white?
Yes, yes, please.
Yeah, I mean, that's still a problem.
Is it?
And
okay.
We saw that this year. There's, I think, one African-American nominated in one of the major acting categories. And certainly there were a lot of people of color who were strangely left out this year in various categories.
That interests me more than just how white it is. It's notable exclusions.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at a movie like The Farewell, which was one of the most acclaimed movies of last year, and it's about an Asian family and was written and directed by an Asian woman, and it got no nominations, you know, and everybody thought that that was kind of a shoe-in for the Oscars because it was a great movie and it was so acclaimed. So the question becomes, did the Academy voters just not pop in their screen, or did they see the Asian family on the cover and say, well, I can't really relate to that, that's not for me? If so, they're not really doing due diligence in terms of voting, and they're denying themselves a chance to see a great film.
I want you to become an Academy voter. I think that would help matters.
I'm happy voting in the Critics' Choice Awards. I got to say,
our
awards this year were incredibly diverse. We had women. We had people of color. We nominated the best of the best.
Okay.
So I'm very proud to be part of that organization.
The best movie, the best actors, and the best supporters, and the best directors, no matter who they were, where they were, anything.
Yeah, because we see all the movies. The simple fact is that the Oscar voters don't necessarily watch all their screeners. They don't necessarily see every movie or performance that's nominated. We, as the critics, do.
What are you going to see? Oh, new movies. I never asked you about new movies today.
Yeah, only one today. Birds of Prey, Margot Robbie, getting a spinoff playing the Harley Quinn character from Suicide Squad a few years ago. So this is her own spinoff movie, and she was the best thing in Suicide Squad. She was so great, so I'm excited to see this.
Well, if that's locally, that's what you're doing today, right?
Yep, and I'll give you a review next week.
Fabulous. Thank you so much, Movie Mike.
Thank you.
Movie Mike McGranahan, professional movie critic. His website, aisleseat.com, and his appearance is always sponsored by the Campus Theater. Check them out at campustheater.org.